Jesus didn't have a problem with people that's in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I'm not even, when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
Ugh. This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. We're glad you're back with us or you just tuned in. This is episode 2 of Faith in Your Recovery. Thanks for coming alongside us. We hope you'll get something from this that makes a difference for you. And we hope that you'll like and subscribe to our program. That'd show a lot of support and mean more to us than you can understand, especially with the analytics and just knowing you're on board as another supporter. So we appreciate that. Our guest today is Nate Cox. Welcome, Nate.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, we look forward to hearing what you've got to share. Nate, introduce us to who you are, what you're about at this point in life, and then we'll break into some other things.
My name's Nate Cox. Born and raised in Jay County. I kind of lived all over the place, Red Key, Dunkirk, Pennville, Portland. I got 2 kids.
How old are they?
Oh, God, you had to ask me that. 12 and 10.
Okay.
I might have been wrong.
That's close. We're good.
12 and 10, they go to Red Key Elementary, so that's where I went to school at, too. So.
All right. Do you live in the Red Key area now?
Right now I'm staying in Fairview, but I just spent the last
That's 3. Not far away no. for you folks who don't know. I used to pastor the church here in Fairview years back, so know exactly where that is and understand that well. So when was it, Nate, that you started your personal struggle with drugs, with addiction?
At an early age, 3rd grade, actually, when I was in...
So you were, what, about 8 years old?
Yeah, that was the first time I could remember getting high. And it was actually me sneaking drugs from my parents and going and doing them by myself in the closet. So... Yeah, that was the first time, and it was mainly because it's what everybody I was the youngest in my household, and I come from a rather large family, so it was just kind of what everybody I seen everybody doing, so I just kind of wanted to be part of the
accepted crowd. Behavior there yeah. in your house, yes. Okay, what had this been a generational problem, obviously, with your parents, but do you know if it goes back farther than that?
My grandparents on my mom's side, they weren't addicts, but on my dad's side, he was an addict till the day he died. But my grandmother, I know she had an uncle that was an alcoholic and stuff like that. So it's been pretty generational for as far back as I can tell, so.
What was the drug that you took into the closet that first time?
Just weed. It was just weed that time. So.
Just weed. Okay. When did that graduate to something harder?
Very, very shortly after that. I can remember I always hung out with my older brother because anywhere he went, he had to take me pretty much. My mom didn't let me leave on my own, so... I can remember being at his friend's house and he left and they had gotten me high. I can't remember. I don't know what it was, but I just remember being scared and going home. And I had left without my brother coming back. So he actually had gotten in trouble for leaving me there. But my mom looked at me and I was like, I just don't feel good. I just want to lay down. So I went and laid down. So that was the summer after my 3rd grade year. So
what did your drug of choice become after the weed?
It started with pain pills. After the pain pills, it became methamphetamine.
I'm going to guess those pain pills, once again, came out of your parents' medical cabinet, okay?
Actually, no. I was pretty good at getting the doctor to prescribe me what I wanted back then, even as a minor. I struggled with some back problems and stuff like that, and they were always easy to find on the streets back then, so... at a very young age, I started buying them off the streets or just lying to the doctors to get them.
Are those young people or younger people today that may not recognize or know how easy it was, how easy it once was to secure those drugs.
Yeah.
You could almost doctor shop, go to Dr. A and get pills, Dr. B and get pills, et cetera. And that continued until they got all these ways of tracking drug sales and different things. All the laws changed. But the worst part of that, and even with everything that is good, there's oftentimes a piece that isn't as good. It caused individuals to turn to the street. And so there's always a source somewhere. That's not an invitation to go hunting. But we all need to recognize drugs exist, even in those places where you wouldn't imagine that being so. It sounds, and as I read in your brief bio, that with the meth came a personal apathy, a personal feeling of not caring that got you exposed. Expelled from school, got kicked out more than once, and then finally expelled. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So when I was younger, I always kind of like really liked school. I was that kid that wanted to do good. I wanted to go to college. You know what I'm saying? And just shortly after using, it just got to the point where I didn't feel like I fit in being that kid. So causing problems, being the class clown, just doing stupid stuff, being caught with cigarettes in middle school. There's a couple times I was caught with weed, but the principal, thankfully the principal was a pretty good guy and he didn't ever tell my parents. He just always took it, you know, and stuff like that. Being caught with pain pills in middle school. And, at 1 year I was suspended 7 times just for being a class clown or being caught with contraband stuff that I wasn't supposed to have.
Behaviors unbecoming a junior high student.
Yeah. So, I lost scholarship because of it. So, just a lot of things where I thought I was trying to fit in. I was trying to be part of my friend group, and really I was just on this fast track of earning everything I wanted in life. So
you made a comment in your bio once again, something about many of your peers were using in the sixth grade.
Yeah. So in Dunkirk and Redkey, I mean, if you know there, it's just a small town. A lot of my peers, their parents were also drug addicts. That's what we did for fun. There wasn't much to do. So we all there, like everybody hung out with everybody. The older kids hung out with the younger kids, older kids. And we all would sit around and either drink, do pills or smoke weed. And that's what we did for fun. Stuff like that. So that was just part of like what our group of people did, you know, that was what you did to fit in. It's what you did on the weekends, it's what you did after school, before school, so.
I'd like to refute everything you just said, but I can't. We had 2 sons grow up in Redkey, and there was a time when the availability and the four-way stop corner, you knew what was going on with all the kids that were gathered there. And behaviors and issues within our community, I believe it's improved. It's come a long ways. Part of that has been through our recovery groups and other efforts and the churches and everybody involved. So we're thankful to say we're at a much better place than where we were, but not yet where we want to be. We're not giving up on this battle. The kids matter too much.
Yes, they do.
And I have always been convinced, and I guess this is almost political, but it's not party political, that the idea of our swing shifts, that we're at a couple of our factories, made it to where no one knew who was taking care of the kids or if anyone was. So they're damn near to that four-way stop. They're there at the corner. But now it's not the same. That has changed. And I think that's led to improvement or at least been a part of it.
Absolutely.
What was it, Nate, that made you want to move beyond that life? Let me ask another question first. How many years did you spend in addiction?
Probably over 20.
Okay, so
and in one form or another of addiction. So,
how old are you?
I'll be 34 this year.
So that's well over half your life's been spent in addiction.
Yeah.
What about clean time for you?
I hate to say this, but the longest clean time I've had was when I was in prison or in jail. There's been long periods of time where maybe I only used, you know, once or twice a month or, you know, only partied on the weekend, but never did I ever stay clean off drugs for any extended period of time unless they just weren't available. So,
okay. What's your plans to get to that point?
I'm just right now. So this time, when I relapsed, I had lost a lot of people close to me in a short amount of time. But I've spent the last 4 years of my life trying to do whatever I can to learn what I need to do personally with myself and my mind and my own body, what I need to do to fix me in order to get my addiction under control. Because it's, for me, it stemmed from a lot more than just the drugs. You know, it was me, drugs gave me false self-confidence. They gave me false energy. They done things for me that...
They lied to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So they was helping me cover up things that I needed to deal with, you know what I'm saying, instead of just try to cover up with drugs. So I've been to a couple rehabs and I've been to jail, and I've learned with every single time I've done something like that, I've learned something new, and it's helped me build my recovery a little bit stronger each time, you know. So with this one, for me this time, it was faith, really. I've always kind of been religious. I always kind of strayed away from it because of the way I was doing, you know. How are you going to say you're a Christian if you're out there selling drugs and doing drugs and doing the things that I was doing? And so this time when I went into jail, I was just thinking about how, like, I really messed up this time. It hurt a lot more than just me getting in trouble this time, my kids. And I realized that, like, when I get out this time, that my kids are going to be pretty much grown. You know what I'm saying? So one of the people from Gideon's or whatever that come in, do the church, he sat and prayed with me, and we prayed for a good 5-10 minutes about just, you know, taking that desire to use away from me. And then I went back to my cell and I prayed again all evening and all night. And I woke up the next day, and in jail, you really don't have the want to use because, you know, it's not there, but I could just tell difference. You know what I'm saying? I could tell that there was something that changed in me, that I wasn't thinking about how am I going to be able to get high when I get out? Am I going to be able to get high before I go to prison? Am I going to be able to figure out a way to get out so I can get high again before I end up having to go to prison? It was, now I just need to figure out what I'm going to do so my kids, my wife, my family are going to be okay while I'm in prison. You know, it wasn't about me anymore. So,
Nate, what do you think you're looking at as far as the possibilities of time in DOC and jail?
Well, I just signed a plea for a open level 4, keeping it open to the judge. They wouldn't agree to a cap of 6, so I'm assuming more than 6 years. But the way I look at it is, you know, I did this, you know what I'm saying? Like, I did this to myself. God has his plan for me, so wherever it's at, whether it's on the streets, whether it's in jail, whether it's in prison, he's given me the tools and he's given me the ability to make use of what I learned, you know what I'm saying? So there might be somebody in there that needs my help, you know what I'm saying? It might be 6 years, but maybe I'll go to a prison and I can get a diploma or something, you know, make use of it.
It doesn't mean it's wasted.
Right, I can make the best out of every situation, and he has his plan for me, whether it be here, out here or in there, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to do something with what he's given me either way, so...
So I think I've heard you say, by reading between the lines, you do not have a high school diploma.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I'm sorry
then.
Go ahead with that.
Yeah, I do have a diploma. I actually got it in prison the first time I went to prison. So,
hooray.
And I've done some college. I've never completed a whole year or nothing, but I was going to college for behavior and addictions. So I'm going to try, when I get out, I'm going to try to finish that and, you know, help in the addiction community, because A lot of what has helped me is other addicts, you know what I'm saying, who's been where I've been. And because a lot of us want to be like, oh, you don't know what I've gone through. But we know what we've gone through, you know what I'm saying? So it's good to be able to sit and talk with somebody that's not going to judge you, that you can tell them all your dirty little things that you're ashamed of, and then be like, listen, bro, I did that too, you know what I'm saying? Like, but it can get better, you know what I'm saying? Like, so.
There, The opening for peer recovery coaches today, and I think it'll only get greater, is phenomenal. Right. You've got that possibility. There's a lot of other directions you can go. Right. But the important thing is that you use your past to influence your own future as well as the future of others. Right. How many out there have been on the journey that you've been on? You know, they've suffered similarly from home conditions and had it available and, you know, made the choice to do it, but now they're making the choice to move away from it and to make a difference and to use what you've had to have that pride. No, it wasn't good what it was, but I can make the best of it just the same.
Absolutely.
And the only thing, the only person who can stop you from doing that, sitting across from me today, okay?
Right, yourself.
So stay at that and build from it. What is the biggest change you want to see in Nate?
I want to get back to the Nate I knew I was before I let drugs take over. Because even in active addiction, I've always been a helper. I've always been a lover, but I've always took it too far to where I was hurting myself, and I was more enabling people than I was helping them. I want to get to the point where I can I can still hold my ground, still, you know what I'm saying, stand firm.
Limits.
Yeah, still firm with my beliefs, you know, with my religion and all that stuff, and not give into that because, you know, what other people think, you know what I'm saying? I want to be able to go out there and be who I truly am and do what I truly believe in without fear of what other people think, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm working on now, so.
What would you consider to be the lights on moment in your life that said, boom, this has got to change. I've got to turn a new direction. I've got to become the me I was created to be. Where was that for you, Nate, and how'd that come about?
For me, it was when they kicked in my door and I was sitting in my living room and I was looking at some of the people that I love the most, knowing that they were about to lose years of their life because of what I was letting go on in my house. You know, I always try to make my house a safe spot for people, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always wanted people to feel safe there. I've always wanted them to feel loved, you know what I'm saying? And at that point in time, you know, I just watched all their lives go down the drain. Like, granted, they chose to do what they were doing and they knew what we were going on there, but, you know, knowing that that was my house and that was my home, that was my safe spot, that I just let people that I care about get caught up in, you know what I'm saying? That was my turning point. Like, I can't be the guy that's going to help people destroy their lives anymore. You know what I'm saying? So
you can destroy your own, but you don't want the responsibility of destroying somebody else's.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. What is it you're doing now to remain as clean for as long as you can?
So, like I said, after that prayer, so my biggest fear on getting out of jail was the fear of wanting to use. And I can honestly say at this moment that God has taken that away from me. I have been out.
That's an incredible thing. Please understand that.
Yeah, and so I've been out for a couple months now, and I still have the fear. My fear, though, is that I'm going to wake up and want to use. I've not had the urge to use or the want to use. And I'm around family who's in active addiction sometimes, and I'm still in Jay County, so I still see it around me, and I've not had that want, that urge, or that anything. So with that being said, I try to go to meetings almost every day if I can, and I try to share my story. I try to give advice. I try to listen to other people's stories because you can learn something from everybody, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to build my faith. I actually currently went on the walk to Emmaus for the first time.
Awesome.
So that was really awesome. So I'm trying to meet more people that I can, you know, not be, because I'm not embarrassed of my faith, but not have to worry about whether, you know what I'm saying,
how it's going to be received.
Yeah, if I'm overstepping, because a lot of people, there's some people that don't want to hear it, you know what I'm saying? So it's good to find your people, just like when you're in active addiction, you go around addicts, you know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to surround myself who want to live a Christian life and who want to talk about faith and, you know what I'm saying, So that's what I'm trying to do.
Your walk to Emmaus, was Lee Funkhauser involved?
Yes, he was.
Lee's a dear friend.
He made me cry.
How? Telling his story?
Telling his story, and then, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but then at the end of the walk, they all write you, like people from home write you letters and telling you about how they care. And I know Lee from before the walk and, you know, Jonah stuff, and he actually wrote me a card that was in the envelope that I didn't expect at all and just told me to keep doing what I'm doing, to keep sharing that I'm very helpful at the meetings with the things that I say and stuff like that. And it just, it touched my heart because, like, it was somebody, you know, that I knew in active addiction that was telling me, you know, hey, you know, you sharing and you telling your story and you speaking at meetings is helping other people, so keep doing what you're doing. So that was just verification that, you know, I'm not out here just talking to air, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly, I get it. Folks, I don't know how many episodes you've tuned in for, how many you've listened to, but the name Lee Funkhauser has come up as often as anybody, most probably. His story is one beyond belief. Narcan, he had OD'd 9 or 10 different times, requiring Narcan to save him. His past, the struggles he had, the struggles he created, the issues that he had with others, losses of family members through overdose, and him being the one to find him. You can find a part of his story on our website at ablbh.org. There is a video there about our beginning. Lee's been part of our organization now for 10-plus years. That's the number of years we've been in existence. He was there day one, and he continues to be. He's become a leader. He works at Avenues Recovery Center in Fort Wayne. I don't want to toot his horn too much, but it deserves to be tooted.
It does. He's an amazing person.
Yeah, tune in and hear. He's been there, done that. He's got the scars to prove it. And he's at a good place. We're thankful for that and appreciate Lee a bunch. He's a special young man that we love, and we're glad he's a part of our organization. There are others just as much so, but Lee's the name that was just brought up, and that's why I wanted to share it with him. I've watched his growth, seen him, and it's been an awesome experience. What do you want folks to know about raising someone who's been where you've been, Nate, who's struggled with the battles like you have? What kind of advice can you give that mom or dad or grandparent?
Just be there for them. You know what I'm saying? Don't condemn them. It's hard not to get mad at them, but don't find out why they're acting out. You know what I'm saying? Because it stems from something other than just, oh, I want to use drugs. You know what I'm saying? Or I want to be bad. There's some type of, for me, it was I wanted to feel included or loved. So, you know what I'm saying? I had a big family, you know. In my big family, I still felt like I was alone all the time. You know what I'm saying? So acting out and getting in trouble, that was moments of attention that was on me. You know what I'm saying? And so find out there's always something else. You know, sit down and talk to him and listen to him. You know what I'm saying? Because I can remember trying to talk to my mom being like, oh, you'll be all right. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, their kids, they're going through a lot of things that they don't understand. They don't understand their emotions. They don't know why they're feeling that way. And sometimes they just need to be heard. You know what I'm saying? And
so, just listen to them. That sounds so simple, but it's a lot more challenging than that, but certainly a major part. Hear what they've got to say. Don't tell them they're wrong. Keep your mouth shut. I want to remind you, we've got 2 ears and 1 mouth. Maybe we ought to be listening 2 times more when we're talking. And you have nothing to lose. And that's how you open the communication. If I open my mouth and you suddenly, oh, that's not so. Well, if I believe it is, that's what matters in that moment. So be there with them. And as Nate just said, listen to them. Nate, what's your plans for the future? Where, what do you want to be someday?
I'd like to finish my education, and it'd be awesome to just work in the community, my community. I've always went away to try to do my recovery or volunteer or any type of peer recovery work. So I think I'm just going to try to get my education and work in my community. You know, that way I can see the growth of the people that I love and the people I've seen grow up and the people that I know, you know, so that to me is more rewarding. You know, I try to base my life on helping others. It's just what makes me happy. You know what I'm saying? I like to put a smile on people's faces. So I want to finish my education and just keep doing what I'm doing, which is telling my story and helping others out where I can, volunteering, you know, just try to get keep growing with the what's growing. Because right now, the type of programs and the stuff they have now is so much better than it was when I was younger. We didn't have none of the recovery programs or none of the resources that we have now. So I'd just like to be part of that resource, you know, so.
I have seen so many changes in the last 10 years in the recovery movement.
It's amazing.
As a whole, the different options. Used to, you had maybe Al-Anon, maybe Celebrate Recovery, not in every community, Alcoholics Anonymous. Beyond that, there wasn't a lot that was active or at least effective. But now there are multiple organizations, and you can no longer use the excuse, well, there's no help being offered out there. I can give you a list a mile long. We have resources listed on our ablbh.org website. We can help connect you with resources. If you want recovery, it's there, and it can be found. What has been the biggest struggle for you, Nate, in order to maintain your sobriety, your clean time, et cetera?
So before it was just this last time I was getting clean, I'd lost a couple people and I wasn't dealing with grief the right way. For me this time, it's just been trying to get back on my feet, because when I got in trouble this time, I pretty much lost everything I had as far as place to live, stuff like that. So just getting out and going from having a house for 3 years and everything I needed to literally sleeping on my mom's laundry room floor again, like at 33 years old. So that was a struggle. Knowing that I could make quick money, but, you know, that money, it comes quick, but it goes quick too. And it drugs just don't bring in money, and they don't give you a 6-year sentence. They can give you a life sentence. And I'm just not trying to lose everything I have ever again. I'm not trying to lose my life, and I'm not trying to have my kids lose their dad. You know what I'm saying? I've already lost many years of me with them because of my drug problem. So it's time for them to be able to see who their real dad is. You know what I'm saying? Be able to be proud of him, just like I need to be proud of myself. So,
dude, keep that picture in mind. You could almost paint that. If I was an artist, I'd try, okay? I don't have that skill.
Me either.
But you can draw that vision and see it and keep it ever before you. And know that the faith you talked about earlier will help you reach that point to maintain the integrity of yourself and everything that goes with it. Nate, thanks for your time.
Thanks for
joining us here today on Faith in Your Recovery and being a part of this effort to make a difference, to touch, change, and save lives. And I believe that folks can take some nuggets from this and they can make a difference. And I hope, if nothing else, it just reiterates to them the importance of staying on the right path, staying on the trail to recovery. So God bless you, each one of our listeners. You, Nate, is our guest. And folks, stay in the battle. Hang in there. God bless. Amen.